Unpaved, Sean Salisbury here to bring an authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the Tuesday edition of Unpaved. Of course, he is Sean Salisbury. I am Adam Sager. You can follow him at Sean Unfiltered, me at Adam G. Sager, both those on X. You can follow the show at Unpaved on Rumble. And then go please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Sean, we got a ton to talk about today. Miley Cyrus got engaged. I don't know if you saw that. I know you're going to be pumped.
Oh, man. Top of my priority list. Can't believe it.
You sent your topics, and that's all it was just Miley Cyrus talking.
Can you blame me?
So we'll get to that later in the show. Another number one quarterback in high school flips right before signing day. Jared Curtis flipped from Georgia to Vandy. That's a big get for Clark Lee there at Vandy. Woo. As he continues to build his resume after getting that big extension last week. Remember, he was talked about maybe he's the guy at Penn State. Nope, he gets his extension along with Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri. He gets a big extension. So we're going to talk college coaching in maybe our second segment, and there is so much going on. It's hard to keep up with.
And let me say something. Let's just talk brass tacks here over Vanderbilt. And this is not disrespect, but Vanderbilt's different, obviously, now.
Yeah.
The coach has obviously quite a bit to do with it because he's really good. Diego's played hellified football, and there it's not just an academic. We saw go through this transformation? Stanford, when Harbaugh and David Shaw were there, and Andrew Luck, they were looked at as academic school that hopefully gets good players like an Elway over the course of time once in a while. Then they became the school that's like, damn, why aren't you, if you're a top quarterback or top player, why wouldn't you want to go to a place that's got that you're not only going to play work for the company, you're end up owning the company someday because you're at Stanford and you're playing quality, top-notch football that's well-coached. So the best of both worlds. Now, Stanford's gone through their difficulties, and Andrew Luck's trying to build that back up with their, you know, with their approach. But Vanderbilt is now what Stanford was. They disrupted the national picture and were in the national picture.
Yep.
Trust me, my Trojans know all about that from Stanford.
Oh, yeah.
And now Vanderbilt, look what the coach has done. Once again, let's not devalue how important. We see coaches that go in and screw up programs, and we also see coaches that go in and enhance them and elevate them. It happened at Stanford with David Sean Harbaugh, and it's happening right now with coach at Vanderbilt. Sags, you don't have guys flip from Georgia. Top recruits flip from Georgia to Vanderbilt. They flip from Georgia to Alabama, from SC to Georgia, Georgia to Southern Cal, Ohio State to Texas. I mean, that's where they flip. So this isn't just, you know, and I know you're not saying it, but it is, oh, by the way, look what.
Right.
This is Georgia to Vanderbilt, folks, in this SEC. And Vanderbilt's got plenty of alum that got money. But the key here is he wouldn't have flipped money or not if they were a shitty-ass football program that wasn't well-coached. He'd have said, I can make that money up at Georgia or some other big program like your guy Underwood who went from LSU to Michigan for 12 mil. So this is such a – make it lost in the shuffle unless you're Vanderbilt or Georgia. But in a national scope, this is real. And I'm not so sure that Vanderbilt doesn't belong in the playoff for some pretty cool reasons, right? I don't know what's going to happen with that, but damn, I'll tell you what, Segs, it wouldn't bother me. It would, right. And I can tell you what, I don't know if they can roll through four of them. but they can beat you in the first round. They're good enough to do that, depending on what the draw was or where they'd be. But this is significant. It really is. And it's mostly significant. If you're Georgia, you're saying, damn, we lost him to who?
Right.
But they're not saying that anymore. We lost to Vanderbilt because look what they're doing. And hell, who doesn't want to live in Nashville? So everything about this is epic for Vanderbilt. And right. Don't kid yourself. Georgia may not talk loud about it, but Segs, this is bothersome.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to lose it to Alabama or Southern Cal or Florida or one of those, but LSU, but you sure as hell are like, you better get real now. Vanderbilt's a player now.
Yep.
And we'll see if they can continue and sustain it because of their academic load, which is hard. And don't overlook that. It ain't easy. Vanderbilt's a top-notch, as good as they're, you know, one of the best in the non-Ivy League school in the country. They're Northwestern. They are Stanford. It is Vanderbilt. Phenomenal. So, yeah. And they're playing top-notch football. So to do this on the high school college scope, this is huge.
Yes,
I just needed to get that in because it mattered, man. It really does.
It is a big deal. We're about to talk about the Monday night game. Patriots did what we thought they were going to do. But before we get to that, Sean, tell me about Augusta Precious Metals.
Well, you know, they're a huge advertiser for us and a huge – I don't even like to say that, Segs. That kind of – I don't want to diminish it. They are a partner, a big sponsor for us. They advertise on here, and they are – not only friends of this show, but a big, they give us cause for celebration too.
Part of the family.
That's exactly right. That's even a better way to put it. You know, I've been watching this football and all the stuff Segs talk about every week. And it reminds me in football and life, you know, the clock's always ticking. We see it in 2-minute drills. We see it in games all the time. When it's late in the game, you don't freeze. You got to stay calm. And you obviously have to make plays and make a smart move. And under pressure and duress at time, it's not. Well, and honestly, at this time of life, I've been doing a lot of soul searching, but also a lot of looking at what's happening in the country, not just in sports. So what about $38 trillion in debt? That's where we are right now, Segs, heading into 2026. That's not hyperbolic. That's not what – that's with a T, trillion. And we're going to get the $40 trillion in debt by the end – at this time next year. We should be staring right around there in the next 12 to 18 months. And that's a lot of pressure. And that's the kind of pressure that doesn't just hit me and Segs. It doesn't just hit billionaires. It hits everybody. It hits everybody, especially folks that are trying to retire with some peace of mind and confidence. Now, you tell me how you're going to do that. Some are fortunate. Most have a lot of grind to get on. And that's where Augusta Precious Metals comes in, and precious metals, gold that you can tangibly hold. And I've been talking about the team at Augusta Precious Metals and talking to them for a while now. And with them as part of this family, they're the ones helping people understand how to keep up their savings and keep the part of their savings in something real like gold and precious metals, tangible. So it's not all tied up to what Washington does next. And listen, whether it's Washington or anybody else that's in the politics business or either side of the aisle you sit on, I got news for you. We all got to complain. Are they doing what's best for us and for you and your retirement and your confidence and peace of mind? Augusta Precious Metals is. I've done a lot of due diligence on my study of precious metals. I have. And I was late to the party, but I've made up for it with being informed, but also being educated. And we had, you know, we've had a phenomenal education, not only on this show, but if you need more of it, you're going to go where I'm going to tell you to go to get an idea of who Augusta Precious Metals is and what gold and silver and precious metals are bringing to the table for your confidence. They put together a free and it's short guide called the $40 trillion threat report. It's real. And it just simply explains what's going on, what options you've got. Now, listen, I know this. If something's more valuable than the dollar and gold is going up and in 2026, 2027, it's going to continue to rise. It's not peaked out yet. This is the time to jump in. And the $40 trillion threat report, which is a simple, short, free guide that lets you know the options you have, not only in retirement, but 20 years before, 5 years before, leading into it. Don't you want to protect what's yours? Don't you want to protect what you built so you're not giving it away? And based on every single decision Washington makes, gold can do that for you. So if you want to see it, there's a link in my description, or just go text Sean, S-E-A-N. Right there to 35052. That's 35052. Text Sean to 35052. And they're going to send it right over. Just take a look at it when you have a minute. inform and educate yourself, and you'll understand. I had a couple buddies, one in particular, and it's one of them I don't know, one I do, jumped in. He says, dude, I'm all in on Augusta, and I'm all in on precious metals. Why? Because I'm trying to protect what's mine, and they are jumping and diving in. But it's not, you're not jumping into a shallow end. You're jumping into the deep end where you can relax. Your feet can plant firmly on the shallow end, but guess what? On the deep end, there's plenty of room for you to go in there and secure what's yours, and that's precious metals. So pop on in there, text Sean, S-E-A-N, to 35052. Get that free guide and that link in the description. Take a look at it when you have a minute, and it's worth understanding and knowing the game and being educated about the game we're playing at stake. So I've gotten more into precious metals over the last year, and now with Augusta, and I love the education when Devlin came on and talked to us about it, or Declan, should I say, came on and talked to us about it. It was impressive, Segs. And for those that got a chance to see it, if not, it's in our archives with the podcast. And I learned a great deal and continue to learn a great deal about what Augusta Precious Metals is doing and what gold can do for your retirement.
Yeah, it's fascinating to get into and kind of just see
it is.
What you can do, because you can do so many different things. All right, getting to last night, Sean. I was at my boys' basketball practice. I coached them. So normally I don't pay attention. I don't even look at my phone during practice. And then I stay off of it so I can come back and just start the Monday night game from jump. You know, I get home about 8:15 or so, and I'm watching the game, and I notice Abdul Carter's not out there. Second drive, Abdul Carter's not out there. Well, he's not out there again. I'm like, what's going on? Is he hurt? So now I start looking at Twitter, and now it's everybody talking about, well, he's been benched again. We just talked about this 2 weeks ago when he was benched for the first drive of the game because he slept through a walkthrough on Friday, was the report. Well, he did it again. He did something. He missed meetings. He missed team functions. Once again, 2 weeks later, as a rookie, benched for the whole first quarter. First off, I have a problem with him just being benched for the first quarter. His ass should have been benched and fined. Do whatever you can to him to make a statement to not only him, but everybody else on that team. And now guys like Dexter Lawrence have come out and said, you know, it's time to grow up. Brian Burns kind of backed him up a little bit, saying, you know, he thinks it's an honest mistake. An honest mistake happens once. It doesn't happen again 2 weeks later for the same reason. So I know you have a lot to say about it, but before you do that, because I don't know if you've actually seen what Abdul Carter said after the game when asked, but this is what he had to say, Sean, and then you can come back and just react off this video and what happened last night.
Your second time in 3 weeks didn't start. What happened?
It happens.
What happened?
I ain't gonna get into detail. Like I said, shit happens.
Why? Why, Abdul? Like, for
asking me the same question, I just answered.
The floor is yours.
Well, Segs, you know, we could spend a whole show talking about this, and I'd love to. I don't know Abdul Carter other than listening to him and watching him play football. I know this. Shit happens the second time. It's a choice. That's not a mistake. That's a decision. It's either you're lazy. It's either you're not a grown up enough and mature enough to understand that you play for a team that this isn't golf or tennis where you miss your tee time and it's on you. Even then, your caddy suffers because they're out there doing their job. I don't know. I feel like we're talking about something like this, discipline reasons about somebody every friggin' day.
We have that.
I do. I just don't get. See, you know why his answer's like that? Because he knows he's screwed up again. And I don't know what the second screw up is, but if the first one happened to be that he overslept, or is this the second one, Segs? He missed a meeting, was late for a meeting. This one he overslept and missed walkthrough on the
day. Yeah, there's different reports.
Okay, regardless, we know the funnel it goes down. Yes. It was conduct detrimental to whatever you're supposed, whatever it means, you show up on time, you broke a team rule. That's what he did, right? Because it would have been something to do with, you know, you had a steroid test and missed it, the whole world would have known, and it's a 4-game suspension, or if you fail that. This is simply in-house, benched again, team rules that he's not abiding by. Who the hell is Abdul Carter at this stage of his NFL career? I know what kind of player he was in college. Dude's a monster. I'm not doubting his talent one bit. But if you're a bigger turd than you are talent, when it comes to being a good teammate, then I'll take the turd. I'll take the turd and toss it out, and I'll go find me somebody else that's talented. I'll take an 8 talent that shows up on time as opposed to a 10 talent that says, oh, this stuff just happens. No, it only happens if you let it happen. A snowstorm, you can't get to work. Guess what? Out of your control. You do what you can. Hopefully you left early enough. If you don't, I got some sympathy for you. You oversleep. You don't make it a priority to be at a function or a team meeting or a practice that you're supposed to be at. It's your fucking job. Does that make sense?
Yep.
This is who you, this is your job that you're living. See, here's the problem with some guys that are ultra talented that haven't been checked throughout their career. They think they're bigger than the team they're playing on. And eventually 2 or 3 years go by, they keep doing it. And you know what we do? We just kind of, oh, yeah, you're great. You're a once in a while guy. You're great once in a while, but you're too big. Your ego's too big, or you're not mature enough or disciplined enough, or just quite frankly, dedicated to this team enough or respectful enough to your teammates to show up on time. If you tell me now, if all of a sudden tomorrow I'll come back and say, yeah, well, his girlfriend, you know, is having a baby, or his wife, I don't know if he's married or wife or somebody went through health issues, then we'll turn around and do what we're supposed to. But as long as we don't know, and it's happened a second time and you were benched, obviously he didn't get benched for doing something the team would say, yo, that's out of your control. He get benched when you do something wrong that's within your control. So he obviously decided, well, whether it's not to show up on time, whether it's to fall asleep in a meeting, whether it's to miss a meeting, whether it's to miss walkthrough, whatever it is. And if you're a teammate defending him, don't give me the young excuse. Don't give me it happens. No, it doesn't. So what happens on a third time is all of a sudden, oh, now the third time's a charm. In baseball, 3 strikes and you go sit in the dugout. And 1 series or 1 quarter, you know what? I would have said, me, take your uniform off. We ain't going to playoffs anyway. Take your uniform off. You're inactive for the game. You ain't playing in a game.
That's all right.
And you start docking in pay. So, like I said, he could be the nicest guy in the world. I know this as a teammate and a coaching staff, how you tolerate this. And did you know this when you're drafting him? I guess the talent was bigger than the headache then. I can tell you right now, the turd right now, when it comes to showing up on time, is bigger than the talent. I'm not saying the individual's a turd. The way you're going about it is what guys that don't care about their teammates or care about their job, this is what they do. And somewhere along the line, somebody's told him, you're talented. You can do whatever you want. And it's permeated into this organization where you're not getting checked. And then when a veteran, give me the veteran who grabs him by the back of the shoulder pad and says, dude, this isn't the way things happen. This is not the way things happen. And I'll share the story again. We had a rookie that played for us, and he was a really good player in Minnesota. Defensive player. He showed up late. In Denny Green's system, when they say rookies and they had to lift first during the week, the veterans got to come in a little later. We had to get it in. Like, you could get it in at lunch if you were a veteran. Yeah. Or if you wanted to get in a quarterback, you get there early and so you get it in. 6 o'clock didn't mean 6:02. Even, you know how sometimes when you lift legs, guys are stretching and getting ready to lift. No, 6:02 meant it, and it was a circuit training, right? You'd circuit, bench press, go to the next one, whatever day it was, lower half, upper body, pull, push. At 6 o'clock, you're at your station ready to go. Not 6:01, not 6:05. If you were a rookie at 6 o'clock, that was your lift time during the week on a Wednesday. Your ass was there, ready, sitting in that weight room with the strength. You're probably at 5:50, so you were ready to go, stretched and ready to go. If you were not ready to go at 6 o'clock, Denny Green every day would say, Steve, how'd it look today in our team meeting? Beginning of practice, when everybody got their 9 o'clock team meeting. We had one late, coach. Who was it? He'd say, offense, defense, or they said. It happened a second time, Sigs. He was late, didn't show up for it, slept in. Good player and a great kid. Great kid. And we needed him. Happened a second time about a week later. Late. And then he says, Steve, you have anybody late? He goes, yeah, one. Tell me it wasn't the same guy. It was, sir. He stopped the meeting. He started cussing us out, veterans. The player already knew how much trouble he was in.
Yeah.
He started cussing the veterans out. You know, Chris Dolman's on that team. You got Chris, myself and Chris Carter, and I'm not putting me in the same, but John Randall and Henry Thomas and Carl Lee and Audrey McMillan. I mean, we start going through the list of veteran players, right? Hall of Famers, great players, Pro Bowl players. And he said, now it's on you guys. So Denny now shifted the blame in the right way that now you guys better make sure his ass, because if it happens again, it was one suffer, all suffer, basically, is what it was. And he was never late again, but the message was sent loud and clear. He just was too, he was young and dumb at the time, but a great player and a great guy. Learned a valuable lesson, because you know what the veterans did all day long? Basically had their cleat up his ass, making sure he wasn't late again. And he was now, Denny wanted, it wasn't on purpose. So if you're not going to be accountable to the organization and the coaches, you're getting fined regardless. Now I'm going to put it in their lap to where now you're showing disrespect to those guys and they're going to start to suffer for it. So what did the veterans do? Every single one of us, whenever you could, come on, man. And some of it was tough love and some of it was arm around him. And some of it was, you do it again, dude. You won't have to worry about the head coach. The rest of the guys in the locker room will take care of it. And I'm not being hyperbolic about this.
All right.
He didn't show up late again. Good player. Everybody loved him. He learned his lesson. But he never made the excuse that, oh, this stuff happens. He knew he screwed up and was bummed about it, but you still got to check him. It's your job. Yep. So while I could go on forever about this, Denny had a magical way of getting into veterans' head of making it see, oh, it's your guy's fault now. Even though the veterans knew it wasn't, right. Now he put the accountability that if you got to drive to his house and pick his ass up, you go do it. The sad thing about it is, Segs, now we shouldn't have to do that. We shouldn't have to do that. But Denny was right at the time. And so whatever they're doing in New York, you either better give some ultimatums. The fine better be huge. Veterans better take it under their wing. I'm just telling you that old school, he wouldn't have been able to get away with this because he would have had his ass whooped in the locker room. I saw it happen. Now, Sean, you don't do that anymore. You're right. We don't. Unfortunately, maybe we do. Maybe we do need to spank our kids once in a while.
Right.
Just like we need to open up a can of whoop ass on a player, not literally, but sometimes figuratively, to make sure he understands what we're trying to get accomplished here. Right now, Abdul Carter doesn't get it.
Right.
And as good as the talent is, the headache right now as a rookie is bigger. And it's too bad because the guy should be a dominant player in this league. Yep. He really should be. And hopefully he will and he'll get it. Doesn't mean it's a lifetime sentence, but I don't want to hear one veteran stick up for him. Now ain't the time to stick up. Now's the time to grab him by the nape of the neck figuratively and say, dude, not only do we need you, you got to get your ass here because you're about a late meeting away from being from your rookie salary getting hit deep or you being set on the sidelines for the rest of the year. And then it starts to hit. But you know what? Don't be a turd, dude. Show up on time. Even if you don't care about your own self and your and what you mean, you sure as hell need to respect the guy sitting next to you. The 10-year veteran showing up on time, isn't he, Segs?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, he showed up on time. Tell me what Abdul Carter's done in the league to warrant, other than where he was drafted, and make good play. Tell me what he's done in the league right now to warrant. He gets to show up late, and a superstar doesn't.
He's got 1.5 sacks and 1 tackle for loss.
So you're basically telling me his game is matching his commitment to practice and being on time.
Basically, yes.
Oh, what a shock, huh?
Yep.
Yeah, that exists. He'll never be a great player if this is his approach to practice, ever. Great talent doesn't equal great player.
Yeah, you just hope that he can learn
figure it out
from this stuff and figure it out and build off what could be a tremendous career that he has. Giants lose 33-15 to the Patriots. Drake May has another really good game, just a solid performance from Drake May. But I think a lot of the talk's going to the other quarterback from the Giants, the rookie, who's coming back from a 2-week absent from a concussion. And Christian Ellis got after him a couple times. He hit the wide receiver, but Jackson Dart going down the sideline, kind of tiptoeing, takes 1 or 2 extra steps. And Christian Ellis made sure that, you know what? Not here. Not in my legal house. I am legal taking hit. You out with a legal hit. And it happens. And, you know, Drake May and everybody said that they need to learn from this, continue to learn from it. But I think the best take was what Mike Vrabel said. So we have video of that. Let's play what Mike Vrabel had to say.
Being aggressive and attacking a couple of times, does the way some of the way that, Christian Ellis had some of those bigger hits at the beginning of the game, is that something that everybody feeds off of? Is that something that, kind of gives you guys a lift?
I think I certainly did. I think our fans did. I think our team did. And again, that's, you know, it's a weekly reminder to the quarterback, our quarterback. You know, I mean, we show them every week. Like, I wouldn't get too cute over there by the sidelines. It happens every week. And so Christian's playing, you know, through the whistle. And as long as the player's in bounds, he's going to try to hit him legally.
I love that he said, like, we show our quarterback every single week hits like this, or who's doing it the right way and getting out, you know. Now, yeah, if it's 4th and 10 and you're going for a win and you need that extra yard, yeah, lower your shoulder and let's try and pick it up and get a win. Because a win is a win in the NFL. They're tough to come by. But, you know, middle of the quarter, you're, you know, close game, whatever it is, there's no reason for you to take a hit like that as a quarterback.
Listen, I've said this about Jaden Daniels. I can say it about Jackson Dart. We can say, I don't know why you feel you have to prove how tough you. There was no space else to go. And as good and tough as you are every now, we love the quarterback that lowers his shoulder and runs through a guy. Those are few and far between. And if it's 4th and 1 and the game's close and you got to get a first down, then go ahead. Then now if you step out of bounds, everybody says, well, what a pussy, right? In those situations, you take on a guy when the game's on the line, do it. But there's also a time and a place when there was no reason to get one more yard. And you're taking on a guy who's running through you. And if I'm a defensive coach, if you're in the field of play illegally, and there was nothing illegal about it, he was in the field of play, he was still in bounds. He didn't hit him in the head. He hit you like you would teach a guy to hit back when Ronnie Lott played, right to now. Without you run through and you hit through his ass. He's in bounds and he's decided. And you know I love Jackson Dart, but he's decided that, you know what, I'm going to take one extra step. I'm trying to remember the down distance of the run. It's irrelevant. But yeah, it was the bottom line is I get you want to prove you're tough, especially as a rookie, to let your teammates know. But I got news for you. We've all been there. Tiptoeing ballerina and down the sidelines is a bad idea. Yep. Especially, man, you want to, you know, when you tiptoe and all of a sudden, if you want to lower and take a guy on and the game's on the line, go for it. But part of the talent and us loving a quarterback and players on the field is I need you to be available. And coming off the concussion, I listen, taking a guy on is one thing. Taking a linebacker or two on in the wrong situation in a certain part of the game and you're by the sidelines, you got to protect yourself because Jackson Dart's no good to me handing out Gatorade to the other quarterback. He's just not. I love what Ellis did. I love that they're teaching and Vrabel played like that. You should be teaching that. Sags, I'm going to tell you what, doesn't New England look like that's the way they've been they practice every day? Yep. And I love the fact that he's telling Drake, listen, you're tough. You stand in the pocket. You take hits in the pocket. You do not have to take these type of hits in the open field. And it doesn't mean you're soft. Now, like I said, you slide on 4th and 1, 2 yards before the first down, and the game's on the line, and we're down 5, and we're at the 45, and you slid, and they get the ball back. Now we're going to look and say, don't be a coward. You got to take a guy on. In certain situations of a game, you just got to know where you're at, and you've got to know the situation. And you also got to know the dude. You can, and when you're tiptoeing down the sideline, say you're not in position to take a hit. You're doing everything you can to toe tap and try and stay in bounds. And then those guys are flying just like when they throw an interception. And it happens in practice, Sags. We practiced it all the time. You throw an interception, do you know what every single guy back in the day, now they protect the guy away from the ball and the rest of it. They yelled out, Oski, or if it was a block kick, yeah. But when we throw an interception, or they would, 5 guys would go get the quarterback. Because it's a clean legal shot now. So you throw a pick in a game, it was like, during my time, it was, they're coming to get you.
Yeah.
And so all those times when you slid and did get, they want to get you. So they're going to take every opportunity when you have the ball and you're in the field, knowing that they're going to get penalized when they hit you late in the pocket or somebody scrapes the helmet or you whisper in the quarterback's ear in the pocket. They're going to get you. But when you got a clean shot and he's a runner and in grass, they're going to knock the shit out of you. And I hate to tell you this, but them going full speed to tackle have a lot more bandwidth to unload on you than you do tiptoeing down the sidelines holding the football. And Jackson Dart's tough. Jaden Daniels is tough. some of the things, it's amazing that some of the things we got to teach young guys, that one of the greatest things they're going to have to learn is when to and when not to take that hit. Right. And that it is a lesson. And Mike Vrabel wouldn't be telling that to his quarterback if he wasn't concerned about his quarterback wanting to prove the same thing. We all want to show how tough we are, but standing in the pocket's guts enough, dude. And yes, doing your thing, everything's guts enough. Jackson Dart's tough. We know that. You don't need to prove it. And you don't need to take those hits because they can't wait to give them to you. And if you're New England, you're teaching that like crazy. There wasn't one negative thing about this other than the whiplash look that when that guy hit Jackson Dart, that is a unfortunate landing that you're taking. And that is, you go in the film room today, Segs, the New England Patriots defense is going dog shit, bat shit crazy, loving what they saw with L. It doesn't matter if they want those guys, they're jumping out of their seats in the meeting room saying, shit, look at Chris, go get your son every day. Those things light up a room, and Vrabel will play it back like 37 times. And then they'll look at Drake and say, don't do this.
Right.
And it's nothing to do with toughness. It's everything to do with you don't need to prove that anymore. Be smart.
Yes, be smart. We need you on the field as a quarterback. All right, we're going to start kind of a new thing we'll do every once in a while. It's our Glock Round Rapid Fire. Today we're going to do the college coaching carousel because – it's going crazy right now, and we still got, you know, double-digit jobs open in college football. So we're going to run through some of the bigger ones right now. Auburn, they hire Alex Golish from USF. So we're going to go about 1 minute on each guy and just fly through this. What was your opinion on Alex Golish going to Auburn? Some thought he was going to be at Arkansas. He ends up at Auburn.
Yeah, I like it, Segs. I know Arkansas is the – What's the word I'm looking for? They're the compared to Alabama, and I'm in that state right now, and it's kind of like USC, UCLA football. And I'm not saying UCLA hasn't beat us. You know what I'm talking about when I say that, right? And it's always going to be Alabama first, Auburn second, even though Auburn's won a national championship. But over the consistency and sustainability, I like this hire because I like seeing guys that went in and had success at programs that you got to recruit extra hard, and you got to coach them hard and hire a good staff. I think Alex is a good coach, and it's proven that. Now, obviously, pressure goes up, but sometimes the best thing is going to a place. Because you know what, Segs? If you're outside the football world, you and I know who he is. A lot of people have no idea who Alex Golish is. None. And you know what? It's not always the sexy name. Sometimes the sexy name's overrated, that you need the guy who's grinded his ass off to get it. He deserved this opportunity, and I'm glad, because they also go in with a Dan Lanning chip on their shoulder. And good things end up happening. Underrated good hire by Auburn. Not shocking, and good on him that they went to Florida and one of the smaller schools in Florida and saw the success he's had and the response. He'll do well at Auburn, but he also knows getting into the SEC is a little different than where you were coaching.
Right. One of the losers of the Lane Kiffin sweepstakes, and that's the Florida Gators. They hire John Sumrall from Tulane. Now, he will stay and continue to coach. It's different than Lane Kiffin staying to coach at Ole Miss. It's not the same. So don't bring that in here. But they
it's
get
not
him
anywhere Tulane. Near the same.
Right. Okay. It's not a different level.
One's
the same
playing conference. For a national title, the other's not. Stop it. Right.
Yeah. So he will finish out his time with Tulane. Florida gets
and
their guy.
It's a different conference. You just said that, yes. Right? Yes, exactly. Yes.
Different conference going. So, but what'd you make of the hire here? It kind of feels like Billy Napier because they're damn near identical when you just look at record and what they've done. But I think John Sumrall has more in his bag as a head coach taking it to Florida than Billy Napier did.
Tulane's become not only a good, they're a good football program. They really are. But they're also, and I'm sure Tulane's tired of this because of Willie Fritz, they've become a good bridge to a bigger program because they are a good. So it's a compliment, but it's a bummer of a compliment because you keep losing good guys, right? You see a theme here, Segs? Sumrall, Golish. It doesn't have to be the $100 million name that gets you. You know what you're looking for? Guys who are relatable and guys who get buy-in. Now, even if you've never seen John coach a football game and know his philosophy, just listening to him talk.
Yeah.
Sumbrough is the type of guy you'd hire after a press conference if you never saw him coach. Go talk to people, say, well, what's he like with the X's and O's and how is he with the kids and his recruiting? You get all those answers. And then you flip on the TV and he's giving a press conference. You're like, oh, okay. Now, I need that because I'm a big believer that guys that get players, they take on the player's personality, the coach's personality, players do, when they're coaching it right. I don't want them to take on the personality if you got a turd coaching you. I think John Sumrall's destined for stardom. I don't know if it's going to end up in Florida all the time. I don't know where it's going to be, but I can tell you this. Every single time I watch him or I listen to him, I come away more impressed.
Yeah.
And I get the Billy Napier. I get the comparisons they got. It's just like when we say, well, you can't hire a USC receiver. You can't draft a USC receiver in the first round. Because you know what? Look at Mike Williams. They're all the same. And then all of a sudden Drake London comes along, or all of a sudden you say, well, maybe they're not all the same. So right. You've got to compartmentalize. You can't judge a Penn State running back based on one guy's Kajana Card as opposed to Kurt Warner's success. Just like you can't say, well, it's Florida, it's Billy. They're different guys. Yeah. It's different. You got to judge them all different and how they handle the program. I think John Sumrall has got a chance to be special. He's a guy that when I hear his personality, I want to play for. And I'll go faster with these segs. These two guys in particular. I love the fact that they're thinking outside the box at both big SEC programs.
This next one's interesting because on Twitter, you see Memphis fans kind of relieved that Ryan Silverfield is going to Arkansas to be the head coach. Like they were talking like, we kind of want to get away from him and start fresh with somebody else. So what do you make of this for Arkansas with Ryan Silverfield?
I get it. There's again, now we're at three coaches going to big SEC programs that all coached at smaller schools outside the conference that these are dream jobs that these guys had growing up, right?
Yep.
They didn't grow up with a silver football spoon in their mouth. I like Ryan here of the three. I probably know the least about him as far as just, I know his philosophy, but the least about him. I think it's going to be tough at Arkansas, no matter who the coach is. Sigs. Now, if they'll do what they're doing for Arkansas basketball,
I was just going to say that.
Dig into the NIL, which I've told you, they got a lot of money. If they distribute it right and use it right, Silverfield's going to have a chance because really Arkansas is one of those that they're in some fertile recruiting ground because they can still get the Texas and Louisiana, and there's some good players in Arkansas and Oklahoma. But they just keep falling short a little bit. What they need him to go in there and do for Arkansas what Eli's done at Missouri, right?
Yeah.
So, Segs, you know what? I'm not sitting on the fence. I don't know if this hire is going to work, and it's not because the guy. It's because of where they're going. This is more an organizational university thing. Are you going to give him the resources he needs? If not, in 4 years, they'll probably be looking for a new coach, Segs, because I'm going to tell you what, the coach they had before was a good football coach. And everybody swears by him. It didn't work out because you're dealing in a conference that if you can't keep up with the Joneses money-wise, you're probably going to get left behind. I'm not sure about this hire, but more importantly, I'm not sure about the commitment they'll make money-wise.
One last SEC team. They told Mark Stoops to kick rocks, gave him $38 million to go away. Kentucky hires Will Stein from Oregon, who is Dan Lanning's OC, who is known as a big offensive mind. So you're going
to
go there.
He's got a Liam Cohen feel to him.
Yes,
that whole thing,
yes.
So, Billy Napier did the same thing, right? Yeah.
This will be interesting, this jump from OC to Kentucky to the SEC. Like you said, sitting there in Kentucky, you can kind of go around and pick from Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, you know, West Virginia, Virginia, maybe go over into Maryland, into the D.C. area. You can kind of pick and choose from everywhere. St. Louis isn't too far. So I think this could be an interesting hire for Kentucky.
My always concern about hotshot young offensive coordinator Segs is score a lot of points, but where will your commitment on the other side of the ball be?
Yeah.
I think with the Stoops family, listen, my golf tournament that I have, Segs, you know, Barry Switzer came, Mike Stoops came, I love the Stoops family. I think it was time for Kentucky to move on.
Yeah,
I do. Sometimes you know, we've looked in society and jobs now, they've done studies saying that most people now, you know how your dad, police force, 30-year guy. You work at Ford, you're there for 40 years. You were, you know, nowadays, like the you know what we've talked, it's like 7 years. Like after 7 years, it's time. Now, coaching's different if you're Nick Saban, but it's almost like the 7-year itch that you get when you move on from a marriage or a business. It's similar now to coach. It's like after a certain time, if you're not dominating like Saban right. or one of those, you're not sticking around a decade. So while I obviously been watching Dan, and I've never met the coordinator, but I love Oregon's approach to offensive football. Yeah. So, and Dan's a defensive backfield guy, so he had to hire a guy to handle all that, and he's handled it and done a great job. I just always get concerned because we spend so much time telling them how hot shot they are, and it's easy to start believing that. Then you go into a program, it's, oh yeah, man, we're in the SEC. They're pretty physical here. For him, the most important thing is not going to be the way he calls plays. He'll right. design them.
Yeah, he'll have. Can you get?
There's no question. They'll score, but the question is, his hire of who's your defensive coordinator, and can you make sure that you stay as hot shot as you are? I think you want people telling you you're a hot shot head coach, not a hot shot offensive coordinator. And it's part of the stigma. You got to be great at something to get hired. But I hope that just to stay focused on. You know you're going to dial up 11 players to get you in position to succeed offensively. Yeah. You're in the toughest conference in the world, or at least one of them. I mean, obviously the Big Ten has theirs too. But there's another guy. Four coaches just got hired. Four coaches in the SEC. Four coaches that most of the football world, unless you follow it every day hard, don't know a lot about.
Right.
And four coaches that we have high expectations for. Things. There's been a little shift, and this is the SEC. This isn't the MAC yep. or this isn't the old Pac-12. This is the SEC. So I, as long as there's the last two, one, give them money in Arkansas, two, the make sure that the hot shot, because it's easy to get caught up in, yeah, man, I know how to dial up plays. Don't forget the other side of the ball, especially in that conference, and turn Kentucky into physical as opposed to offensive finesse. That'll be his challenge.
Yeah, and then your rival, UCLA from the Big Ten, they hire Bob Chesney from James Madison, who is also playing, trying to get into the college football playoff talk and win their conference championship. So what do you make of this hire for the
Bruins? No time in history have five guys been hired around the same time at big schools, big conferences, Big Ten and four SEC, where we've sat back and 80% of the world has no idea what they do. And I don't mean that disrespectful to them, but I love the trend. I think this is a really good hire. How many more times do we need to be convinced that James Madison's a hell of a football program? You know what I'm saying, Segs? I think I'm actually excited if this is a crosstown rival. I hope he doesn't get too good,
yeah.
But I'm actually excited to see, because one thing guys like, When you're – how old is he, Segs? Do we have his exact age?
I don't have his exact age, but I want to say early 40s.
I was going to say late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah.
And I know this sounds trivial, but one thing you got to guard against, like Sean McVay had too when he got it, is you got to guard against the fact that some of the guys – he's not going to face it, but when the NFL head – how is he, 38?
48.
Oh, 48. Okay, so he's a little older.
48 in that picture.
I was going to say, he looks like he still could be a fraternity boy at UCLA. But what you guard against is, you know, you don't want the players to buddy-buddy, right? You still want to make sure there's that. And I had no idea. I thought he was 10 years younger.
Yeah.
I did. Which is, here we are on the beauty contest. I'm just talking about the respect you gather. Now you're going to a bigger conference. But we hopefully should be past that to the point. We got a lot of young coaches succeeding. Doesn't mean every coach has to be young or every coach doesn't have to be old. You know how important it is to hire great staff around you, but he's put resume enough up and UCLA's been reeling long enough when a coach leaves to go be a coordinator. And then you fired Deshaun Foster during this season and you're trying to find it. He's put the resume up. It's time for him to get a job. The truth is, I don't know a lot about him overall. I know about his program more than I know about him. And I've got buddies that went to James Madison, but he deserves an opportunity at this stage. Because of these five coaches, folks, the round, when we call it the Glock round, this will be a 3-minute fast and furious round. But we're still actually learning, especially here, But UCLA, I think, is in good hands. But, right, we don't know because this isn't James Madison. It's right. The Big Ten, and now you're going to be faced with that.
Bob Chesney will continue to coach JMU through their season as they fight for that college football playoff spot. Same for Will Stein. Kentucky is allowing him to stay with Oregon and coach through the college football playoff. And then one last coach.
All different because you're not driving down the interstate or the, you know, from Oxford to LSU. Different story.
Last coach, Michigan State. They fired Jonathan Smith after just a couple years, who was supposed to be the guy after Mel Tucker. Well, they go out and they get Pat Fitzgerald. We know how it ended at Northwestern with Pat Fitzgerald, with all the stuff behind the scenes, all the accusations made by former players, which I actually know the initial player that came out. I played basketball with him in high school. He was a friend of mine. So I've talked to him since a little bit, you know, and I'm just getting his side. Of course, I haven't talked to anybody else. But Michigan State goes out and hires Pat Fitzgerald. What did you make of this? I think we all thought Pat was going to get back in at some point, and here's his chance to turn around this Spartan team that has not been good for years.
No, they've sucked.
Yeah.
This is the safest hire of the group. I know what people, what are you talking about, Sean? I'm talking about as a football coach.
Yeah.
You know and what you're getting. Segs, I know what I'm getting. That's exactly right. From James Madison to UCLA, from Tulane to Florida, from another smaller Florida school to Auburn, you don't know what you're getting. Right. From an offensive coordinator at Oregon to the head coach at Kentucky, you don't know. I think we have an idea there how good they can be. This is the safest hire football wise. Now, listen, say you got your buddy, he said, she said, what went on? He's cleared and is able to go play. Pat's my era guy. What Pat did at Northwestern, Segs, if you're just talking about straight line coaching football, they had no business winning a lot of the games they won. They just didn't. So as far as safety, getting taught football, how to do it the right way. And is there anybody that epitomizes what a guy that's coaching at Michigan State looks at? You know, he feels like he could have played at Michigan State, even though he played at his alma mater. You know, there's this tough, physical, do it that way. It's not going to look pretty very often. It's going to be ugly, hard. Yeah.
He is down Big Ten.
Begs for rain and snow all the time because he wants to play in a mutter. That's what you're getting him. If you think you're getting it here, now he'll hire it and they can spread it out and do it. But if you think you're getting a guy that's going to, he's going to take the tire you gave him and he's going to get 110,000 miles on a set of tires, dude. That's Pat Fitzgerald. This is the safest football hire of the six. When I'm just talking about, he may not be the most, with the most ingenuity or the most creativity, but when it comes to just coaching football and experience, this is the safest hire. How it turns out in the conference, who knows? But I can tell you this, there'll be a more disciplined, better football team, whatever that means. I don't know where it's going, but I would, Stanford, at first I thought maybe Stanford because Northwest, the academics, he knows how to balance both.
Yeah.
I think Pat will do well. Matter of fact, I'll actually think that Michigan State will get respect again as a football team. They haven't had it in a minute. Yeah. I think this is a safe hire. Segs, I don't know 5 years from now how it's going to turn out, how it goes, but I do know this, that Michigan State, after getting all this cleared and knowing what you get, and he also knows the Big Ten, I think this is a really good on-the-field football hire. All the stuff that goes on elsewhere, Segs, I wasn't a part of that. This is all, I hear both sides of it.
Yep.
I like Pat. He's always been good to me, and I think he'll coach them well. He's got a tough task to rebuild that program, and who knows what kind of resources they're going to give him. As a football coach, every stone will be turned over, I assure you.
Yes. All right, switching over to the college football playoffs. Texas. This has been a big story now for days. I mean, we had multiple people on ESPN watching game day, shilling for Texas, along with Vanderbilt and all the SEC teams, because that's ESPN's conference. But here we have Texas sitting with three losses. Should we be talking about Texas in the college football playoff, or do they need just way too much to happen to get in?
Well, thanks. How much do they? And it's a great point. And Isaiah, by the way, yeah, Luther Ellis played in my Luther Ellis. I think he's still a little younger than me, but good football DNA for Christian Ellis. Just to answer your question, Luther, on that side. So very, very. It doesn't fall far from the tree when it comes to explosive, right, good players and being a real pro. Segs, okay, let me ask you this. If it come down to Vanderbilt and Texas, who would, I'm just throwing it, regardless of where they are now, if it came down to those two, who do you think the committee's taking?
Who do I think? Tonight's going to tell us. If Vanderbilt's ahead of them tonight, then Vanderbilt goes. If Texas jumps them for whatever reason, beating A&M, and that jumps them over Vandy, even though Vandy had a good win, then they're taking Texas. If there's that spot open and it's between those two.
Is there any chance that Texas jumps both?
You just don't know because that brand factor.
That's why I'm asking. I don't know if it's going to happen. Say that. I told you last week that three losses after they got beat that last game, I said there's no way they don't belong in the playoff. They haven't played like it. It was okay to stick by. But we did beg the question, Siggs, and we asked this last week. I think it was on Wednesday, whenever we finished talking about college football. He said, is there a chance? What if Texas is impressive and goes in and takes care of their business at home and beats Texas A&M? Are you okay with it then? The full body of work, Siggs. How many big top 10 wins do they have?
Texas 3, right?
Yep. Sark will tell you, and he's right, that where A&M was at the beginning of this week or last week before tonight, that there were some that thought that Texas A&M was the best team in the country. There were some, you've seen it on, so whoever those some are, Sark made mention of that. Hey, we beat a team that some, and we beat him by 10 points.
Yeah.
The argument exists. My gut tells me they're not getting in. I mean, my head tells me. My gut tells me they're going to move up in the rankings and get in this playoff. Do they deserve it's the question. Is the brand bigger than the – I don't think so either, because the loss, if they did deserve it, they should have gone and handled their business against Florida, and they did not play well. They didn't handle their business. So I'm staring at this, Sakes, but then there's this. Let me give you a scenario. Georgia beats Alabama.
Right. Bama's out.
Texas in then? Because if Georgia loses to Alabama, Georgia's still going to the playoff if they lose to Alabama.
Here's where it gets tricky. 1 and 2 play each other. They're both in. Three plays 10. And I'm
three's
just
in no matter
people.
What.
Yeah.
This three's is in no matter people. What.
Three's in no matter what. Four's in no matter what. Five is in no matter what. Even if they lose to BYU, I think Texas Tech is in. Ole Miss is in. A&M's in. OU's in. That's eight teams. If BYU wins.
OU was a little dangerous last week because they were flirting with not being in.
They were flirting with not being in. But so we have Texas Tech in even if they lose. So let's say they lose. BYU's in because of the automatic. Then you have Notre Dame. Alabama, like we said, if Alabama loses, they're out. I don't care that they're playing in the conference championship. You're out. Then
Alabama's done with a loss. They're out.
Yes.
Yes.
And then the other, we're talking about Texas, but Notre Dame, Miami. How do we still have Miami behind Notre Dame? Miami beat Notre Dame. I don't care who Miami lost to and whatever. The metrics aren't just this huge difference between the two of them when you talk about strength of schedule and all that stuff. We have a head-to-head. If head-to-heads don't mean anything when it comes to the playoff selection and we're leaving one out and putting one in that lost, then there's no point in this. And we might as well just let the committee pick August 31st and say, here's our teams, go. We'll just have a playoff.
The regular season's just a scrimmage game, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's where this whole thing doesn't make sense. And we'll see tonight if anything has changed. Miami went up and put an ass whooping on Pitt, knocked them out of the top 25 who they were ranked.
It was a beatdown too, Siggs. It was emphatic. Yeah, so they needed that too.
So let's even just say if Texas Tech wins, BYU's out. So you have those five, Ole Miss, you have A&M, OU, they're all in. That's eight. Then you have whichever of the group of five team. Let's just say North Texas has ended up being the highest ranked group of five. They're in at 12. If Virginia wins, they're in. If Virginia loses,
with the ACC. Yeah.
Yeah. If Virginia loses and JMU wins, they're in. We could have JMU and North Texas or Tulane in there. The winner of North Texas and Tulane is in. If Virginia loses to Duke in the ACC championship, JMU's going as well. We would have two group of five teams. And I don't think people realize that. It's just the five highest ranked conference champions. It doesn't have to be the ACC champion. So Duke is not jumping all the way up to ahead of those two teams. So now you've basically sitting with two spots for Notre Dame, Miami, Vandy. If Alabama were to win, if BYU were to win, Texas, I just think there's too many teams in front of Texas that if Alabama wins, there's two spots. And I think where they're going to get lucky is I think Georgia wins and I think Texas Tech wins. That opens
hard to beat a team twice in 1 year, especially the way Texas Tech manhandled BYU the first time physically.
Yes.
BYU will be ready to play. I favor Texas Tech too, but it's hard to do twice.
Right. Just say that happens. That leaves two spots open. Three spots open. I'm trying to do this on the fly. No, it would be two spots, 9 and 10. I think then you get lucky and you can put Miami and Notre Dame in if you're the committee and it's kind of decided for you.
Yeah,
but Vandy's going to be pissed.
Yep.
And Texas is going to be pissed. Texas can be pissed. Just get out of the picture.
Well, listen, you can be pissed. You know what? The brand is great. Sark's great. Arch Manning's a brand, and he's played better football the second half of the season. All those things. You can't judge the season by one game.
Right.
It's got the body of work. And the body of work with three losses, I understand you beat Texas A&M in a rivalry game. You also lost to Florida, who's a bad football team and fired their coach.
Yes.
That's got to come into play. They've had opportunity. All it would have taken, and I know they got three top 10 wins, but they also got some ugly losses. It would have been just take care of your business is one of them. We're not even having the conversation.
Yeah,
you lost
to Ohio State. Sure, you get a little credit for playing Ohio State. You went up to the shoe and you lost by a touchdown. Fine. But you lost by what, 35 or whatever it was to Georgia, and then you lost to Florida. So, sorry, you have three losses. You're out. There's too many teams with just two losses ahead of you that I think
Vandy. It's just one of those seasons. It's unfortunate. Now,
yeah.
Segs, let me further this. And I know that there's people out there that won't like to hear this. And I know the rules are set up for this. I don't like the group of five getting an automatic bid. They're not one of – I'm sorry to tell you, North Texas isn't a top 20. North Texas doesn't belong in the top 12. And so much respect for what they've done. I mean, their coach has moved. Where's he headed to, Segs?
North Texas,
Oklahoma State, right?
Oklahoma State, Eric Morris. And he will coach them.
He's coaching as well.
Yes.
I get it. But come on now. Now, if you're Vanderbilt, should you be jumped by North Texas if all of a sudden they win? And they get in? I mean, come on, Segs.
Yeah.
So the whole thing, and I understand we want the – listen, I understand it, but I'm just going to tell you guys right now. In the way this system set up, the group of five winner will never win a national championship.
Right.
They just won't. And it's not because they're not good. It's not because they haven't played their ass off. It has nothing to do with their fan base. It has everything to do with simple rolling through four times to beat teams with all that depth. You're just not going to do. You may upset one. You'll win a game. You can win a game. But are we electing or selecting, should I say, these teams? Let's just say it was Georgia's taking the 12, Segs. Forget champions, right? Just taking the best 12. Are you selecting the team, the 12th team, to win a playoff game? Or the 12 teams in, we want all 12 worthy of a national, to win the national title? Now, you could probably say the same thing. Is Vandy going to? No, but they play in the SEC. They've proven it against that competition. I have a problem, and I know that that's going to probably fall short. Segs, you may disagree with me. I don't like automatic bid for a group of five. You know, if you go undefeated and kick ass and have played a couple monster non-conference games and you've earned, I got no problem. They've earned it in their conference. They're good football teams. But no offense to that, North Texas hasn't gone the same route as Alabama has gone to get there.
Yeah,
they're just not Alabama. Even if Alabama was out after they get beat by Georgia, and then we said, well, we've added a few teams. Now we're down to North Texas and Alabama. Who's got a better chance to roll through four games and win a national championship? We know who it is. The rules are set up, so we live by them. Yeah. James Madison's a great program, and North Texas. But I can tell you at the end of this playoff, if James Madison and North Texas get in, neither one of them will be playing in the national championship game. You do know this, correct?
Right.
And it's no disrespect to their fan base at all. So that's neither here nor there because there's nothing we can do about it. It's a guarantee. If they do it, they're getting in, that group of five. And then you go from there, six. And James Madison, because what conference are they in now, six?
The AAC. Are they in the American?
And they got a chance to get in too, playing in theirs.
Okay? Yeah. Yeah, so, if they win Virginia loses,
so when you go group of five, I wish we'd get to a system where the 12 best teams, and you say, okay, Sean, well, how do we get to that with a committee?
It's too hard with super conferences. We need, right. Like, it needs to be, there needs to be something done that we spread out these conferences again. And, you know, I don't know how it would work with all the money and the TV rights and all this shit, but.
Conference with four, with the four power conference championship, and then everybody else playing for it. They can go play for their national championship like UCF, CS do.
Yeah.
And then they're, you know what I'm saying? That's what I want. And Dr. J's right. Three losses for Alabama got them out. Why is Texas any different?
Yeah.
Alabama's the same size brand. So,
and the thing is there with Alabama, they beat Georgia once. Now Georgia's coming back and beating them. So it's kind of,
and that's dangerous for Georgia, even though they're getting in there. Like, why do we have to play it? Is Alabama? They got their number. They're pretty good against Georgia, right? So, as witnessed by their victory earlier this year. But so, Segs, and it's not to I don't want to put a damper on the group of five at all. Hell, not one bit. But I'm just saying, do you think the group of five is going to be one of the top 12 teams in the country?
No.
Okay, then
maybe
why aren't we,
maybe every once in a like once every
they'll 10 win a game years, they can upset
get,
somebody
get
yeah
a team that you know goes
they're not getting crown champions
it's a good
right
powerful
Central
team.
Florida when Scott Frost's team did their thing I get it well Hawaii remember when they flew to Georgia what happened in that one
yep
they beat him down so bad hell damn near felt like they should cancel the program and Hawaii had a phenomenal season with a Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback so. It's just different. Not that they don't have good players, but the overall depth of your team, your third string backup freshman is your All-American at probably a group of five. And I don't mean that. And sometimes you hit and miss on these. But so, Segs, getting back to the Texas thing real quick, I don't care what happens between now and then. I don't think Texas should be in the playoffs.
No, I don't either.
And I just live in the state, and they're my guys. But on the other side of it, and I know who you beat, and I know who you lost to. And I know that you're going to pine for it, but I can tell you this. You should have taken care of your business like you have to do when you play a 12-game schedule. That's why I'm still not convinced they're fully out of it. Are you, Segs? I'm not convinced.
I'm not convinced they're fully out of it until I see tonight's rankings. If Vandy's ahead of them, Texas is out.
They're done. Right. And quite frankly, Vandy deserves it more this year, I think.
Oh, 100%.
In my opinion.
100%.
And I got no skin in the game with Vandy other than I like what their coach has done and the way they've played their ass.
Yeah, and Diego Pavia's played a hell of a season. He should be
it's
in
fun
New York.
To watch.
You know, probably not winning the Heisman, but he should be in there.
He should have a seat there, Segs.
Yes.
Because his impact on the university and the team cannot be understated.
For sure. We'll talk about this tomorrow when we get the rankings tonight amongst another jam-packed Tuesday night of college hoops we got tonight.
Hey, can I ask you one question, Segs, before you hit college hoops and before we go? Just put that college football, the top 25 back up again. Just from your eye test, real quick, Segs, and I'll just say yes or no, I agree with you. Who are the top 12 teams in the – you don't have to say, well, you know, go through, well, Georgia Tech lost this when they won this. Just from your eye test, who are the 12 best teams in America today?
All right, give me.
You got a playoff. You and I are putting together a new system. We're putting together the 12 best are playing in the playoff because we want it to be. We want the 12 best. Who are they?
Give first me Ohio five State. You good? Yes, first five in.
Doesn't have to be in order. Okay,
right.
Those five belong. You good with the second five right now?
Yes, I am. I'm good with the second five. And then
so
give
now
me...
basically I got what, six teams or seven teams to get two more.
Yeah.
Well, you go, you know, if you want to keep
based
Virginia
off
in
this
it,
season, give me Miami and Vandy. So the top 10, Miami and Vandy. That would be my 12.
And you know how, and you know how 13 people, how complicated that's going to be. Now, obviously, Alabama gets, if Alabama did not play this weekend, Alabama's in the playoffs.
Right.
If Alabama wins this weekend, they're in the playoffs. If Alabama loses,
they're probably out.
They're out. So you're like, if you're Alabama, you're saying, damn, wouldn't it be great if we had the, if they could just make it, we didn't have to play this week. I mean, even though I know they want the competition, but playoff wise. So you just named the 12 best teams, and I can make an argument. You know, Virginia's done some good things, but they're not one of the 12 best.
No.
If I had to bet everything on the top 12 teams, Virginia wouldn't get my money. BYU's really good, but and right now as they sit, they can beat a couple teams in this thing, but the 12 best teams right now, I would agree with you. If you want to make an argument that BYU, Texas, Vanderbilt, Miami, and University of Utah, it kind of go back and forth. Some would mix and match. Fine. Yeah. I know who the 10 are for sure.
Yes.
That I'd put in. But but I could tell you who you're not putting in, and you exactly know who I'm going to say. But so basically your 12 are going to be, from the eye test, have nothing to do with Virginia or James Madison or right. North Texas, right? Or even the University of Texas.
Right.
So, and, you know, hell, some are going to make the argument that some of those other teams may even belong in ahead of them, too. But as much as I love them, it's all about what you've put up and what you've shown. And the eye test and the results say you lost three times. Alabama's missed out. The University, and you're not playing in a conference championship to have an opportunity. You're done.
Yeah.
Even with a win over your rival.
I would have Miami ahead of Notre Dame. Like I said, I would have Notre Dame in the third five.
But they would still be in your top 12.
Yes, they would be in my top 12.
Agreed.
Like I might have Vandy over Notre Dame if I was really, you know, looking into it. But yes, those 12 would be my 12 in.
So I just wanted to get an idea if you're like, well, Sean, you're a man, Virginia's playing. And they have played good football.
Yeah.
My Trojans.
Yeah, I like them. But they're not
the best football team. I don't love them. There's a difference. Sage.
Right.
I like James Madison.
Right.
I like North Texas. I love the story. I like University of Utah and my guy Kyle Whittingham.
Yep.
I don't love him, but I love the first 10. I love the first 10.
Yeah.
But I got pretty good affinity for the next five. But I can tell you right now that Miami's on the verge of possibly getting hosed, Sakes.
Yeah.
They are.
No, it's going to be fast. We'll see how that sits with them.
Yep. No doubt.
If it comes down to they got to choose between Notre Dame and Miami, and they choose Notre Dame. People are going.
Well, if they
got to
choose between
minds.
Notre Dame and Miami, you know who they're choosing, right?
Notre Dame. They're showing it. They've showed it every week.
If you're Miami, I'd be as much as I like they can't be sitting comfortably right now, Sigs, where they are.
No, they can't be.
Although we think they should be fairly. They can't.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be judging from the committee that where Notre Dame and them are. You should not be overly comfortable with that.
Nope. Nope, and we'll really find out tonight where
Can't
things
wait.
Stand. That college basketball night that I talked about, we've got Iowa at number 7, Michigan State. We've got number 13, Tennessee at Syracuse. We've got number 15, Florida, the reigning champs, at Duke. Number 4, Duke, that'll be our bet of the day. We'll do that in a second. We've got number 5, UConn at number 21, Kansas. We've got number 16, North Carolina, taking on number 18, Kentucky. And then I threw in there at the end, Sean, your Trojans are ranked 24th in the country. They take on their first Big Ten test in Oregon. So, I mean, we got
like my football team. We're in the top 25, but we got nowhere to go just yet, right?
And now you got to play Oregon. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Lucky on that beautiful court that we all are.
Is it playing in
Oregon? Yeah. On that court that's an eyesore, but beautiful, but an eyesore.
Yes.
Eyesore. Hey, Six, real quick, is there a better Tuesday night during the year? Hell, even in the tournament, you don't. This schedule we have tonight is basically tournament basketball.
Yeah.
Played in December. It's phenomenal. This is one of those, if you don't watch college basketball, watch, because you're going to get a taste of some hellified basketball. I love it, and I can't wait to see it.
Best thing for college basketball is the fact that these coaches, they don't care anymore. They are scheduling all these games. Like Gonzaga, we got Gonzaga and Duke, I think, coming up. Gonzaga plays everybody. Basically every single year, because they know they're going to walk into their conference and basically go undefeated, maybe lose a game or two, and they're getting into the tournament.
And that game, one of those losses will be to St. Mary's, Sigs.
You know what I'm saying, Drew? Always it'd be St. Mary's. Right. But yeah, so I mean, these teams are all playing each other. And they love it because it makes their teams better for March. And you know, it gets them ready for Big Ten basketball. It gets them ready for the SEC or the ACC. So, I mean,
there is a different philosophy. Play the tough guys all year long, as opposed to play a team you're going to win by 30. What the hell am I learning by that?
And right. This is a schedule.
I agree, brother. Oh yeah, because you played five. If you played a bunch of games against those guys, your guys need a little bit of break so they get their legs back under them. Right.
Right.
No doubt.
Yep.
And your boys at Michigan are playing some hell.
They should be the number one team in the country. Putting them at three is a joke, but. Whatever, it's,
you're okay. Right now, as we sit, you got a one seed. Okay.
Yeah.
And real quick about that, listen to Rick Pitino talk about, you know, his team and talk about the Lane Kiffin thing. I thought he made it really interesting. How can you imagine that we're a one seed, and in March, he said, the NCAA has got a problem. In March, I just decide that I'm not coaching.
Yeah, I'm gonna go coach.
Basically, and I paraphrase. Yeah.
Well, for him, St. John's, and you know, it'd be different, but. It'd be like just going to Coach Duke or something. Like, I'm going to another powerhouse and I'm just going to bail.
Yeah, isn't it? It's just so that the situation is so weird, isn't it? How this turned out. It is just so. I'm talking about the Kiffin thing. And not to get on, I just said how it was handled poorly. The scheduling's poor. You can't blame a guy for going to do it. But we said, Sigs, and I'm telling you, I had to talk to a guy I know from Ole Miss. They had played at Ole Miss in the past and is dialed in. He just said, you know, they're not mad at Lane, understands. He goes, but, you know, you go ahead and win 10 or 11 games for the next few years, like we said yesterday at LSU, but don't win a title. Lane will be looking for his next dream job.
Oh, if you're an Ole Miss fan, you're at this point, you're whatever, he's gone. You just hope he never wins a title, ever.
If LSU and Alabama were both open at the same time, who do you think Kiffin would
have? In a second.
There you go. So people know that's the dream job. That's the job that he'd want. If Alabama comes back next year, and if somebody wants to pay it $80 million or whatever the buy, you know what I'm saying, Six, and offers him the head coaching job, he will leave and go take it. You know this, correct?
It's going to be fascinating because there is still whispers from people in college football that don't count out Kalen DeBoer to Penn State. They're still saying it as of yesterday. And it always comes from different people, but it keeps being said from people that are inside college football, not just fans or, you know, message boards. It's from actual people. So, I mean, that Alabama job could be open. And then, I mean, what's Lane to say?
Yeah,
you know, just so pay $7 million to leave LSU already and go to Bama.
Don't get too comfortable, LSU, because he could win 10 or 11 games for 3 years or 1 year, and all of a sudden Alabama says, we'd love to have you for a buck and a quarter. Oh, yeah, I can wear that red, that crimson color. I'm all in, right?
And if Alabama, because I'm pretty sure I saw it's $7 million. If Lane wants to leave, he has to pay the school $7
million. Alabama would pay that
in a second if they really wanted Lane in that situation. So.
But you know, if they were both, if it was not Florida and LSU, if it was Alabama and LSU, you know where he'd be coaching right now, right?
Yes.
It would be at Alabama.
100%.
So don't get too cozy. And he could have great success there and never win a national championship. He could. Yeah. And still have a $100 million job waiting on him because he knows how to coach. I love him, but the whole thing has been abysmal in how it went down.
You already hate it. If it comes open, might as well. Nobody, you know, it's just Lane being Lane at this point. Can't turn a hoe into a housewife.
It's another historic gig. And Lane has coached his way into a lot of good ones, man. God bless him. And he's got a lot of money to boot. Good for him.
All right. Real quick before we get out of here, bet of the day, Florida at Duke. Duke minus 9.5 over the reigning national champs. You think Boozer Twins and Saar and all them go out there and just tear Florida apart?
Yeah, take a fly. I'd like to say that Florida's going to be a little closer in this one, but I'll take Duke by double digit six.
See, I think Florida does keep it close. I kind
of no, you do really
that out there
just because of the competition.
Yeah, I think Florida with Alex Condon and company they're still really good.
They're good, and put it this way, they're better than a 9.5 point spread.
Yes, let's just put that way. Yes, they've gotten off to kind of a slow start, so we'll see how that goes tonight. Tomorrow we'll react to the college football playoff rankings. We'll talk maybe some college hoops. And we'll get into the Lions. The Lions are, you know, really? A lot of injuries, a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. How big of trouble are they in? You know, is they're dearly holding on to one of those last playoff spots at the moment. So in a tough NFC.
Do you think the Lions, if I said, give me a futures bet, $50,000 on it, they making the playoffs?
Yes, I would put a yes. Okay. I'd slide it yes. Okay. So I still think there's enough talent that will come back. They lost Laporta for the season. They've lost some guys, but St. Brown and them, they'll come back and they'll still be really good down the stretch, I think.
It's going to be a tough gig because they got a couple teams in that division playing pretty damn good football. Yes. Your team's one of them.
Yes, so we'll talk about that tomorrow as well. Thank you to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to Bailey, as always. Once again, go like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Same time, same place. Peace.
Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.